guitar up.
One,
turn
two,
that guitar
three.
Up.
I'm Redbeard, and today in the studio, it's the best of Rock and Roll Hall of Famers, The Faces.
Oh, Cindy, ain't you noticed that several of your friends have moved on?
God, we used to drink.
Did we used to drink some?
And that only came about because we didn't think we were very good. We literally didn't think we were very good. I mean, look at it. You had two guys out of the Jeff Beck group that had been fired, and you had the leftovers from the Small Faces. I mean, what, big five losers, if ever there were five losers, all thrown together, you know? So we used to get really drunk and go on and do the best we could, but it worked, you know? That looseness and the jangliness of all the music, it really worked. This is Rod Stewart in the studio.
And this is Kenny Jones.
Hi, this is Ronnie Wood.
And Ian McLagan.
In the studio.
Some of rock and roll's most beloved, most admired, and most durable musicians received their due as 2012 inductees into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. The Small Faces, the mid-60s British invasion band fronted by the legendary dynamo, the late Steve Marriott, the rhythm section of Ronnie Lane on bass and Kenny Jones on drums, and keyboard player, the late Ian McLagan, joined their later Faces bandmates, singer Rod Stewart and guitarist Ron Wood, as well-deserving honorees. Clearly defined by the original Steve Marriott years or the later Rod Stewart period, regardless of which era you focus on, one constant ran throughout: a world-class soul singer. When Steve Marriott and his prodigious pipes left the Small Faces to form Humble Pie, it left almost impossible shoes to fill. The Faces, as they were now called, chose a little-known singer who had been cut loose from the Jeff Beck group named Rod Stewart. How did you, being the youngest boy, change the way in which you were raised, particularly by your dad, you know, the approach that he used on you versus the older boys?
Well, I think because my two older brothers, one of them, Bob, he's what we call a teddy boy. He was a bit of a rebel, and he got himself into, not terrible trouble, but he had a couple of run-ins with the police just enjoying himself. And I think my two brothers made it easier for me to get away with things, you know. I think my mum and dad were getting a bit tired of because there was five of us all together. They were a bit tired of the two boys, the two elder boys. So they made it easy for me. They paved the way.
What do you think your dad's dreams and aspirations for you by the time you wanted to leave for Europe, what do you think they were as a lad?
Well, his first love would have been for me to become a soccer player, a footballer. And I had trials, as I talk about in the book. I was never good enough. I knew I wasn't good enough, but he had four sons and he always wanted one of them to be a footballer. And I was the last one. I gave it my best shot, but I knew I wasn't good enough. But then, you know, he encouraged me. I can't ever remember a bad word him saying about me trying to become a singer. You know, which was a big risk in those days.
So how did your dad's wisdom influence your own approach to parenting, particularly your sons?
He wasn't really that strict. He never allowed any swearing in the house. He never liked me drinking because he didn't drink himself. Probably the only Scotsman in the world that doesn't drink.
Really?
No, I mean that in the nicest way.
Yes, of course.
The Scots do like a tipple now and then. But he wasn't too much of a disciplinarian. And I think that's the way I've been with my kids. You know, I let them get away with so much, and then the hammer comes down.
Thank you.
From the Second Faces album, the critically lauded Long Player in 1971, Had Me a Real Good Time established a central sentiment that would inform practically every aspect of the Faces over their career. They just never took themselves too seriously. Here's Faces lead singer Rod Stewart.
My first guitar was it was funny because I didn't know how to tune the guitar, and as I say in the book, I had to walk about a mile to get it tuned. I was just leaving school, and by the time I got home, the bloody thing was out of tune again, you know. But we struggled through and picked up three or four chords. But this one, it's about what I would consider my first love affair when I was about 16 or 17, maybe. And, you know, I used to go down to Brighton on the south coast of England. I was a beatnik, and it's sort of a reflection of my first love affair, and my first child was conceived there, and also reflections of the 60s, which was a wonderful time.
Rod Stewart told me that prior to joining the Faces, it was evident that the times, they are a-changin', as Bob Dylan would sing.
At the time I was a beatnik, I had hair right down my back. I mean, you're talking about mid-60s, you know, when it was absolutely unheard of to walk around with hair down your back. So when I got sent back from Spain, I decided to cut it all off, and I became a mod. I cut it real short, and that's how the Rod the Mod thing came about.
Really?
So I started listening to James Brown and Otis Redding and Sam Cooke. And to this day, I still listen to those guys. They've stayed with me. So totally, within the space of, you know, 2 days, I totally changed my image completely.
Mm.
And suddenly everything was different. And that, shortly after that, was when I got into music. You know, I was asked by Long John Baldry on a railway station in London to join his band. You've heard of Long John Baldry,
sure.
Yeah. Asked to join his band.
In a railway station?
Yeah, I'd just been over to see the Rolling Stones play over at Twickenham. There was only about 30 people in the audience. Must admit, I was about this close to the stage. There were 30 people around there.
For
all
the Stones.
Brian Jones was on guitar. Ian Stewart was playing piano. And they all sat on stools. They all used to sit down and play on
stools.
And yeah, Mick used to play the harmonica on a stool. It was funny. And so I was on my way back to London. And John had been to see them as well, and I was drunk and on the railway station playing harmonica and singing. He said, "Young man, why don't you join my band?"
Did you know who he was?
He needed a backup singer. Oh, I knew who he was. He was real big time around London at that time, you know. It was a marvellous scene around then, because it was the time when the Yardbirds were just busting and the Stones were just getting going and the Animals were coming down and playing in London. It was a tremendous time.
It was 1966 when Rod Stewart got his first big break with former Yardbirds guitarist Jeff Beck.
That was the breakthrough. If it wasn't for Jeff, I may never have come to America. I mean, that was some band to be in. You know, we did our first concert at the Fillmore East in New York, and I hid behind the amplifiers and sung because I was so scared. Major curse of stage fright I had that night.
Have you ever had that before or since?
Oh, yeah, I get it every now and then. But that was a tremendous, tremendous period. A great band to be in. Ronnie Wood was playing bass and Jeff on guitar, Mickey Waller on drums and me singing and Nicky Hopkins on piano. It's a real good band.
We'll be right back.
superstitious, but a black cat crossed my trail. I said so one time before. Ain't superstitious, a black cat crossed my trail. Bad luck ain't got me so far, and you know I ain't gonna let it stop me now. Come on.
In New York, yeah, the day before the concert, we were all there to do Woodstock, and he had some trouble with his home life, and he said, "That's it, I'm going home." Well, he was always doing that on tour. He was always just getting on a plane and going home, leaving us there. But he did it the day before Woodstock, so that was more or less when the band folded up.
Original Small Faces and then Faces drummer Kenny Jones reminisces in the studio.
In the 60s, we had tours that were package tours, and We were on one particular tour, which was the Small Faces, Free, and The Who.
That was late 60s, though, wasn't it?
Oh, no, that was Faces, that was.
Old Faces. Oh, yeah. So, oh 60, yeah, right, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, the Small Faces one was way back in the 60s. And then our paths crossed again when the Faces, this was with Rod Stewart, and Free. We did a tour together, an American tour.
Yeah.
the Chugging Faces Freight Train on the album A Nod Is As Good As a Wink in late 71, featured Rod Stewart on vocal, keyboardist Ian McLagan, Ronnie Lane on bass, and Kenny Jones bashing away on drums, driven by the monstrous rhythm guitar work of Ron Wood. But unlike their first two albums, which were critically raved but otherwise ignored in America, A Nod Is As Good As a Wink found a waiting audience. Find out the reason why from Rod Stewart next, plus Ronnie Wood and the late Ian McLagan later. I'm Redbeard, in the studio with Rod Stewart and Ronnie Wood for the Best of the Faces.
And this is Kenny Jones.
Hi, this is Ronnie Wood.
And Ian McLagan.
In the studio.
Rod Stewart here, having the time of my life in the studio.
And I'm Redbeard, with a singer who has entertained millions for decades now. Not bad, he writes in his autobiography, Rod, for a guy with a frog in his throat. With that in mind, I asked Rod Stewart what it is exactly that makes a great singer.
It's not what you sing in tune, because by God, Jagger's never sang in tune in his life, and neither has Dylan, but the emotion is there, and the style, and you just know it's them singing. I think that's the most important thing.
Sure.
And I get asked this question so many times. You know what I mean? What makes a great singer? I wouldn't say it's a great voice always. It's a style, having your own style of singing. Whether you hit the note on, you know, in pitch or whether you sing particularly in tune, it's just having a great style.
Thank you.
unbeatable combination was the music of Chuck Berry's song Memphis, Tennessee, lovingly rendered by one of the world's finest true rock and roll bands, The Faces, on the late 71 classic album A Nod Is As Good As a Wink. Here's lead singer Rod Stewart.
Yeah, we went on to The Faces then, the well-known drinking group, The Faces. But it was a great era. It was all made on Matus Rosé and Martini Rossi. I remember that used to be the prerequisite from the band. Yeah. We used to have a bottle of rosé and a bottle of Martini Rossi, and it would be gone by the end of the evening, but by God, we got some tracks. I can't remember much about it because it was done a long time ago under a big cloud of alcohol. God, we used to drink. We used to drink some. And that only came about because we didn't think we were very good. We literally didn't think we were very good. I mean, look at it. You had two guys out of the Jeff Beck group that had been fired, and you had the leftovers from the Small Faces, right? I mean, what, big five losers, if ever there were five losers, all thrown together, you know? So we used to get really drunk and go on and do the best we could, but it worked, you know? That looseness and the jangliness of all the music, it really worked.
How much of a motivating force was that initial rejection when you were struggling to get your first label signing?
It didn't break my heart, you know, it was just the way they went about it. It wasn't about the way I was singing. They just, as I say in the song, they didn't like me clothes, me nose or me hair. They just, what category do we put this bloke in? Because in those days they were signing pretty boy singers with pretty voices, and I was just totally the opposite. So I got, you know, I got rejected. Eventually I did finish up back with Decca Records, and they released my first single, Good Morning Little Schoolgirl. And I have a distinct memory of when I left school, I had my first job of listening to Sam Cooke singing Cupid, Draw Back Your Bow on the little tiny transistor radio, which I talk about in the book. Mm. And I think that was my earliest connection, because up until then, I'd been really a folky, listening to Woody Guthrie and Ramblin' Jack Elliott. So it was probably Sam Cooke. Well, Sam, to this day, has always been a huge part of my life. I've always tried to phrase like him. So he's a constant inspiration to me. You know, if he's always been my point of reference. If in doubt, listen to Sam. But it's reminiscent of a more of a Faces track, I think.
Too bad we were slowed down spells. We never got a chance to sing. We were quite polite with one invite to keep us off the street. So we mingled for a minute or two with the high class clientele. And then somebody said, shake a leg. I was most intrigued by the colored queen leaning on the kitchen door. Then I was ushered with my friends by the butler, who was 12 feet tall. But let me please explain, cause we're not to blame, we just don't have the right accent. Socialize. Oh, you know it's a shame how I always get the blame. All we wanted to do was to socialize. Oh, you know it's a shame how we always get the blame. Waiting for the all-night bus home. Too bad my regional tour.
What a fabulous recording by veteran producer Glenn Johns on The Faces' Too Bad, on A Nod Is As Good As a Wink. There's a liveness to this track, a sense of the room of a band playing together in real time. How did you get the take?
Humble equipment that we used, you know. It was just, it's all real playing. He's a real bass player and a real guitar. But, you know, it's, I think what it is a success of this album is because we just got lucky with the right collection of songs, the right musicians, and everybody had the right attitude. You know, we wanted that to just flow out and make it sound like we were a garage band. Ronnie had it was a very loose style that he had, and no one could ever quite do it. He just does it. It's natural, you know, a very loose right hand.
With newly remastered sound better than ever, Stay With Me from the Faces was a worldwide hit in 1972, catapulting the quintet from abject poverty to top of the pops, seemingly overnight. Why the eager reception this time, though? Find out how the quintet went from long player to long faces with an unforeseen complication when Ronnie Wood joins Rod Stewart. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, on Twitter at Redbeard Rocks, and online at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard, in the studio, and you can make me dance, sing, or anything. The Faces.
This is Rod Stewart in the studio.
And this is Kenny Jones.
Hi, this is Ronnie Wood.
And Ian McLagan.
In the studio.
Thank you all. I'm Redbeard with the best of The Faces. One thing that is abundantly clear after reading Rod Stewart's colorful autobiography, Rod, is that in all of his relationships throughout his entire life, whether it's professional or personal, Stewart embraced the philosophy that it's easier to get forgiveness than permission. Here's a case in point.
So that would have brought us up to when I signed a solo contract in 1970. The lawyers made a lot of money out of that because I signed the Faces contract, Warner Brothers contract, without letting Phonogram know about it.
And they're the ones that had your solo album.
Yeah, they had the solo
album.
And
you didn't tell them.
No, I didn't tell them. I think that's how it went. I know there was a big lawsuit that all got settled. But it was a strange old period. Probably with the Faces, because I couldn't get them out of the pub. So it's the trouble with the Faces. We could never get us out of the pub.
The 1973 Faces album Ooh La La included a rave-up reaction to the mysteries of breast augmentation called Silicone Grown,
And we ain't talking computer chips here, folks. By spring 1973, the Faces were selling out huge arenas across America. Meanwhile, lead singer Rod Stewart had followed his solo project, Every Picture Tells a Story, with another hit solo album called Never a Dull Moment in 72. The five penniless musicians who had been so united in their struggle now faced a foreign foe, fame. Again, Rod Stewart.
Promoters used to put out Rod Stewart and the Faces. And in the contract, unbeknownst to the boys and myself, when the guys got in, when the band arrived in town, the Rod Stewart had to come down so none of some of the rest of the Faces didn't see it.
I remember
one night,
the
promoter didn't bother to take down my name. You know, well, you can't blame the promoters.
All they want to do is
sell tickets, and I just had a big hit album, so obviously they want to put my name up there. But
that's right.
It did cause a hell of a lot of embarrassment. It really did. A lot of heartache. And as I said, that was, why Ronnie Lane left. It started as a bunch of guys who were basically all out of work, like we were. And they were becoming a backup band, I don't think it ever really bothered Woody. Woody's a happy-go-lucky guy, but it bothered the others. I think that was probably the start of the bust-up of the Faces, really. Ronnie Lane didn't like it at all, It embarrassed me, because I only signed a solo deal to do things that I thought the Faces wouldn't do, because I intended to stay with the Faces until the end. I did, yeah. Well, us British are very loyal, very, very loyal, especially in the music business, we tend to be very loyal. I have to be pushed into situations. I had to be pushed to leave the Faces and go in a solo career. And they were good mates, they weren't like... I can never understand bands that go on the road and they dislike each other and they hate touring. And I mean, why do it? I mean, we were mates. We were like blood brothers, the Faces. Once Ronnie Lane had left, I'd lost a lot of interest in it. And once Mick had approached Woody to join the Stones, even though Mick had sworn on his mother's life that he would never do that, once Woody had gone, obviously there was no point in carrying on.
Cindy, incidentally, from Ooh La La, is another example of Rod Stewart's unconventional lyrics, rarely rhyming and sometimes missing even a chorus. Somehow, you got that jangly Faces looseness. How do you do that?
I think it's a style that you know, when you're doing one of these rambling songs, and it is a rambling song like Where It Well and Maggie May, the musicians know exactly what I want. It just throw it together, and that's what we did. We didn't spend much time rehearsing it or working it out. All finished and done in a few days.
Faces guitarist Ron Wood and keyboardist Ian McLagan recall Woody's transition into the Rolling Stones in 1975.
We didn't want anything to be announced that I joined the band. It was something we just let gradually seep in. We didn't make an official announcement. For some reason, we agreed to do that. I don't know why. I think it was Keith's idea. But I was at the party, Robert Stigwood party, when the night that Mick Taylor actually left, he told Jagger, and Mick came up and he said, "He's left the band, what am I going to do with him?" I said, "I don't know." He said, "I really want you," he said, "but I like you in the Faces too much, you know, I don't want to split them up." I said, "Well, nor do I. You have to find somebody else." I said, "But if you get desperate, really desperate, give me a ring." I don't know how long later it was, about a year or something. He rang me in LA. I was ill in bed, and he said, "I'm desperate, Woody." They were in Germany, making Black and Blue. I went over and I said, "I'll help you on the album." You know, so I got there and I was checked into a room between Jeff Beck and Harvey Mandel. I think Steve Marriott was around there, and everybody and his brother, Eric Clapton, was like, I don't know what the hell was going on. I walked in the studio and I said, "All right, here's a riff," you know, and it was, what's that song called? Charlie said, "Cool, he comes in here and starts bossing us all about." But that was just for that recording session. And then we were in Geneva or something, and then I read in the paper, Rod Stewart quits Faces. I couldn't believe it.
No, the headline was, "Faces break up."
Thank you, Rod.
It was Rod, wasn't it?
Yeah.
He announced it, because I wasn't going to split the band up, no way. In fact, 75, I did two Faces tours and one Stones tour that year.
Did a Faces tour first, then did the Stones tour, and then did another Faces tour, never stopped.
I think in a year I had 3 months off the road. You know, the more money you get, the more money you have to earn to keep it going, because the more money you pay out, the more you get. I mean, you have to keep working as well. Oh, yeah. There's only a few people like Rod Stewart in the world.
And Mick Jagger.
And Mick.
Poor old granddad, I laughed at all his words. I thought he was a bitter man. He spoke of women's ways. The trap you'd and the use you before you even know. For love is blind and you're far too kind. Don't ever let it show. I wish that I knew what I know now. When I was younger, I wish. The dressing rooms are great.
title song to the 1973 album Ooh La La. Today's show is dedicated to Ronnie Lane and keyboard player Ian McLagan. Much missed. The Faces' 4 original studio albums have been remastered and a bonus disc of rarities added to a new CD box set called You Can Make Me Dance, Sing, or Anything, 1970 to 1975. I'm Redbeard. I'll be back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking my guests, Rod Stewart and Ron Wood. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Productions. Copyright 2015, all rights reserved. Transcription, Jane Carpenter Brune. Theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, on Twitter, at Redbeard Rocks, and online at inthestudio.net.